survive, thrive, stay alive. It's time to get prepared with the Prepping Academy podcast.
Are you ready?
Hey, welcome to the Prepping Academy. I am Forrest, and we have Tenderfoot is in the house.
I'm definitely on time for this one.
Dude, so we recorded another show right before this one, because that's the way we do this. We rock it. And he shows up 5 minutes beforehand.
That's plenty of time.
That's plenty of time, okay.
At least I'm here.
You're here, rocking it.
That's it.
So, and during the break, I did a funny on my phone, and I laughed, and tears came out of my eyes.
It was good. I could not breathe. I was totally not ready for that. That was good.
Hey, you guys are listening to the Prepping Academy. We do a show once a week, most of the time. This week, two, in one night. It's double release Tuesday, because they'll be released tomorrow.
And make sure you have your tacos.
Double tacos.
Double taco Tuesdays. At the Speedy Gonzales.
So we just finished with Cloyd. It's hard to talk when you can't hear yourself. With Boyd Craven.
There you go.
We had to switch headphones and all this stuff because he literally comes in with a shirt on his back and that's it. Not even
I
have
pants on. I do have the pants on.
You know, you want me to hit this button over here?
Go for it.
and I forgot you got me. Oh, just go to the Prepping Academy, Prepping with ING, Prepping Academy website. Sign up for a mailing list. You'll win big things. We'll send them to you. wow, a break from authors. I don't think she's written a book. Are you reading about her now?
I'm checking your mail.
Hey, we're doing a high quality professional show, and what are you doing? You're looking at memes on the internet.
I'm about to leave for a week, and I'm trying to, multitask.
Okay, so you have been gone.
I have been gone.
It's been such a blessing.
Nice.
No, you've been missed.
Thank you.
And you you did things around the world, I'm sure, like you always do.
That's it.
But this week is going to be interesting.
Yeah.
Because we are actually going on a trip together with a bunch of other people.
That's right. We have a mission together.
We have a mission. You have a job to do there. I have a job to do there. You're in charge, and we're doing different things. But I kid you not, the first thing he says in the first 5 minutes he's here before the show goes on the air, he looks at me straight in the eye and goes, "Hey, I'm going to need your help. Can you help me this week?" And I'm like, "What? What do you mean you're going to meet?" Oh, and then we start the show. So he is already trying to recruit me to help him.
That's right. My job is always more important. My needs.
That is, what is wrong with you? Listen, I
got it. You want to do it so bad.
I do.
You even have to explain it to him.
I don't want to explain
it to him. Yeah, you don't want to explain it to him.
I hope they could not hear that. This is a rated PG. I typed this word in and hit play, and it read this word, and it just cracked us up.
Yeah.
So, but tonight, preppingacademy.com.
Yeah.
One of our sponsors is the Conflicted Card Game. We're not going to read one tonight because we got such a big guest on. Probably, I hate saying this because belittle the guests we've had, all the guests we've ever had on, because we've had some the biggest names in the industry. But tonight is my favorite person. It's Nicole Appillion.
I believe that's right. Appillion, yeah.
From the Alone Show. And I loved it. Hey, Bear. Hey, Bear. She kept talking to the Bear. She was awesome. And so she is on the show tonight. And we're looking forward to that.
That's right. And the show is coming out.
It started last week, I think.
No, I think it's this week.
Oh, is it this week?
It's this week.
Okay.
Yeah, it's while we're at camp.
Oh, I do have it already DVR'd.
Yeah.
We're going camping with a large group of people. Some may not come back alive. That is for sure. So, oh, goodness. So this is going to be, like I said, I've been looking forward to this, and I have to give credit. And I don't want to give credit to this guy too much because he's in all these books, and I've been trying to get him killed off. His name's Chen. You probably know him. He's in all these authors write about him, and I just tried to get the authors to get him to kill him out. I don't know, just jealousy. I don't know what it is. But Chen introduced us on Facebook to this lady, and I am so looking forward to it. And we're going to – you got anything to say before we bring her on?
Man, I'm excited to ask some questions. I'm actually looking because you were talking about the book, and I was trying to find out if she was writing the book.
She's a smart lady. So
I know.
She's probably written all kinds of things.
And then I don't want you to make me feel so bad. So
well, I'm
going to
make you feel bad because you got to understand, every author we've ever had on, I look across to Tenderfoot and say, hey, have you read any of his books? This is live, too, and it's on purpose. I haven't gotten to him yet.
Yeah.
I can honestly say that you're more prepared for this interview than any other interview you've ever done because have you ever watched the show?
All of them.
A what?
Every single one of them.
You've watched every, so you are more prepared for this interview than any interview you've ever done.
Yes, I am.
That is amazing.
Yes.
If you don't come out with some great questions, I'm going to be, you're fired.
Every week.
And I always put them on the spot with the authors. I'm like, hey, Travis, what did you like best about his books?
That's it.
So I think she is on. We're going to go live right now. We're going to bring her, Nicole, on. Let's see. Nicole, are you there?
I am. Thanks so much.
Awesome. I was just telling people just a few minutes ago how excited we are to have you on here because we both watched the show. And you don't get to know authors, you get to know their characters, but we got to know you at least a little bit from the shows. And
it's a pretty apt description of me on the show.
I'll be honest with you, and if you have never watched the show, then this won't make sense. But anytime I'm in a situation where things are kind of unknown, and I'm with a group of people, I always go, now I always do this. I go, hey, Bear. And people look at me like I'm weird. But I say that all the time. They're like, what does that mean? I'm like, well, you'll have to watch the show to understand it. But I don't know. I loved it. But let's see. Let me ask you for forgiveness before I pronounce your last. Is it Apillion?
It is Apillion. Yes, it is.
Oh, yes. Sweet.
Yeah. You got it.
Did a high five. Okay. So it's Nicole Apillion, and she is she's a lot more than what the show. I mean, she was on the show.
Yeah.
She did unbelievable. But, man, I started looking at your resume on your website, and you're a doctor, a scientist, a mother, educator, researcher, safari guide, herbalist, instructor, a coach. I mean, you're like, are you the president of the United States as well? Have you been?
That's coming soon. No. Apparently,
that
I can't
soon?
Stick to one thing is the reality of it.
I mean, you do everything. So tell us a little bit of history about yourself and how does someone get all these titles as well? That's crazy.
I grew up in Massachusetts and just always had a real love and passion for the outdoors. And I was really lucky. My stepfather, whom my mom married when I was 7, really fostered that in me. He was a great influence in my life and a really good mentor and would come home early from work and we'd go canoeing or go bring our field guides and our binoculars and go to the beach or whatever it is that we did. And he was a really wonderful, wonderful mentor that way. And as I got older, I decided to go into biology because I had a passion for wildlife and the outdoors, and I love science. And kind of continued on that trajectory. And after I got my master's in biology, I traveled a lot and lived out of my Volkswagen van for actually quite a long time and did a lot of odd research jobs here and there.
Wow.
But eventually decided to join the Peace Corps, which brought me to Africa.
Okay.
And from there, I was a game warden. And then after that, I loved Botswana, which is where I was living so much that I stayed and became a partner in a lion research project. And that allowed me the opportunity to live in the bush in the middle of nowhere in a tent and really live in, you know, wildlife territory, you know, no other people around, and really sort of fostered nature connection and awareness and tracking and bird language and all of those skills. And then later on got involved with the Kalahari San Bushmen, and I've been working there for 23 years over in Botswana. And, you know, they really helped me hone those sort of hard skills, like how to make a fire from scratch and how to tan an animal hide and how to look at my surroundings as my grocery store and my pharmacy. And when I moved back to the Pacific Northwest, I originally had moved out here in 91. When I moved back here for good, I really decided to hone those skills here, and kind of, you know, in a roundabout way led me to where I am today. So that's a little bit. That's my background in a very, very small nutshell.
I think it's so great with this is Tenderfoot. With all of that, with your background and stuff and what you've done in Africa and everything, a lot of people don't know this, but I have an anthropology background. And
I see that
you have that as well. So I just that's
no, hey, Tenderfoot, no one cares. This isn't about you, Dan.
I finally have a connection.
I care.
Okay. So you have a connection with one of our guests. That's amazing.
That is
awesome. And so with this incredible background, I mean, gosh, you seem like you've lived like four lives in there. That's just unheard of. And you enjoyed being alone in Africa? I mean, because the alone show was mostly mental. I mean, when we talked to Chris or Alan Kay, they said it was all mental, very little skills. So that had to help you for the show, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think the time in Africa really helped me hone the skills of actually being by myself. It allowed me, because I had a lot of time when I'd spent 7 weeks was the longest time over there. I was solo. Of course, I didn't have to fend, you know, get my own food and all of that. I would go to town, which was about 3 hours away every couple of weeks, and be able to pick up supplies. But it really gave me that opportunity of being by myself and realizing, I think a lot of people, you know, a lot of people haven't been solo before, especially without access to a cell phone or the internet or Facebook or any of that. So to have that opportunity, to already have had that opportunity before I went on alone, to have spent time really just with myself, I was looking forward to it before I went out on Vancouver Island. And I actually had a beautiful, lovely time out there. I loved the time I spent up in Vancouver Island. It was fun. I felt really engaged with the wildlife around me and the environment around me. So I never really felt totally solo up there because I had so much connection to everything else that was there and formed these individual sort of bonds with the animals up there as well. But definitely the time in Africa helped me to get into the right headspace for something like that.
And you're so well prepared because, I mean, you knew things, and you not only are you, like, let's just take for an example Alan or Chris, they know the survival skills, but it takes more than survival skills. You had the mental skills. You also understood a lot of the herbs and the plant life, and then also medicine, which, I mean, from your website, I mean, you make some of your own medicine as well. And so that's,
yeah.
I mean, to put, that's the complete package is what I'm saying. Some of these other guys, like, I mean, Alan and I are good friends. He just muscled through it. But you had more skills.
You really did, yeah.
You really had more skills than anyone that's been on that show.
Oh, well, thank you. I think some of them would beg to argue, but thank you. That's right. We have a lot of skilled people on that show, and I'm really proud of the cast that was out there on the show as well. Each and every one of them were really well qualified. But thank you for that. I really feel like the herbalism skills and the knowledge of the edible plants is really important to round out your skill set. For me, it meant that I could dig roots, I could find mushrooms, I could find plant life, and those really helped round out my diet. And on top of that, definitely the medicine skills were important. at one point on day 43, they didn't show it actually on the TV series because it apparently wasn't a big enough injury, but I sliced my knuckle off on one of my fingers and completely off.
Wow.
Yep. And it was really cold. My hands were literally freezing, and I was filleting a fish in the water, and I had quite a large knife out there. And the last fillet, it just sliced my knuckle off, and it's right on the knuckle where I bend it, so a lot of blood, and I tried to keep the flap but lost it. And it was a really deep cut, and had I not had the knowledge of herbal medicine, I probably would have gotten a pretty bad infection and had to tap out. But I didn't.
Right.
I was actually able to heal it and barely have a scar left today. So the knowledge of the plants around
me
was really, really helpful. And I collected a lot in advance so that by the time it froze, I had a lot collected and in my shelter. And that's what I ended up using when I cut my knuckle off. I went back to my shelter, and luckily I had dried yarrow and things that I could use, which is a great antibacterial, that I could use on that wound and be able to heal it out in the field.
So in a sense, your skills, I mean, that is really cool. Your skills actually in a real, we'll say real world situation, because you really did slice it. I mean, I won't say it saved your life because you did have that lifeline out, but that's cool. Not cool. That's incredible when you can use skills that can possibly save your life. And 99.99% of the world have no clue what to do. And you've honed these skills and become an expert at it as well. That is pretty sweet.
I'm always learning, you know. There's always more to learn. I was just teaching a medicinal herb class and medicine making class on Saturday, actually, and it was really wonderful. I had 20 students, and I went into Portland, just a couple hours from where I live, in order to teach. And the class was so knowledgeable. There were definitely some people that had a big herbal background in the course. And I love when I teach like that because I love learning from students. You know, they have good questions that make you delve even further into what you're looking into. And I really find that by teaching these sort of skills, and I teach wilderness skills kind of across the board, and prepping skills and survival skills, whatever you want to call them, I find the more I teach, the more questions you get, and that really makes you dive in a little bit deeper. And I also think it's great for students to take classes from different people. You know, I always say ask different instructors the same question because you'll get different answers. And I love that as well. And I teach a lot of primitive skills gatherings. And it's hard sometimes to take classes when you're teaching because you're so busy. But I always try to make time to at least take a class or two when I'm teaching at these gatherings because there's so many skilled people there. And I don't want to stop my learning. You know, as you said in the beginning, I have so many things that I do, is I like to delve in deeply to a lot of different subjects. And I'm not afraid of being a beginner, you know. Like, obviously,
right,
if you delve into something new, you're going to start over, right? It's like being a child and you're going back to school and you know nothing. And I think it's important to keep learning. And even if you know nothing, you know, to dive in and, you know, try it out and learn more. So I enjoy doing that.
Well, you know, what is a shame, I'll just be honest with you. If it wasn't for 57 days on the show alone, the world, in a sense, I would have never got the opportunity to meet you, see your skills, and admire what you do.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I'm so thankful for the show. and the things that people, I mean, because the show, I think, opens a lot of people's eyes up to go, when you take some of the best survival people in the world and you put them in that environment, you really get to see what's important and what's not important when it comes to life.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and I don't know, a lot of my friends have watched it and they freak out and they go, oh my gosh, I couldn't last a day. I'm like, yeah, you're going to die. But I'm so glad you were on the show. And did you have your classes and your training academy or whatever you call it, or school? Did you have that active before you even went on the show?
Yeah, I've been teaching skills for a long time. Actually, Jose Amoedo, who was on my season, he lasted 59 days. He lives up in the Yukon. He was the only person I actually knew on the season when we ended up at boot camp and we all, you know, met each other for the first time. He and I have been teaching together for about 15 years. So I've been teaching these skills for quite a while. And, really have enjoyed it. But it's been nice, you know, after having been on the show, it definitely, like you were saying, it allows more people to have access to the knowledge that I have, and it also allows me to be able to share that story, my story, with people and bring it to more people, which has been a wonderful thing. And I feel that that was a real gift that the show gave me, and part of the reason that I wanted to go on the show in the first place. So,
can you tell us something about the show that maybe no one knows, like, hey, this is what happened.
Oh,
what
inside information.
Yeah, just to kind of bring us more into the show, like, just some little...
I'm trying to think of some juicy nugget. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a question.
Something that wouldn't violate my NDA. Let's see. I could tell you Mongolia was wild, but I can't say too much more about it. It's going to be a really interesting season, let me tell you. People are going to want to watch it. Season 5, the fan favorite show. I think one of the things that's it's really kind of a thing that maybe people don't realize is all of us on the show we're friends. You know, I never felt like I was competing against anybody else. I was just really competing with myself. And when we all, you know, especially for the fan favorite show, we all got to be in Mongolia together for a couple weeks before we actually went out solo. And it was so wonderful to be with 9 other crazy people who want to do this sort of thing and chose to do it again. And I feel really blessed for those friendships. So both seasons, actually, when I was out there, I would pray every day for the other 9 people out there, hoping that they were having a good journey and that they were safe and that they were doing well.
Oh, no.
And
No. Not
true.
Me.
Yep.
I'd be putting X-Lax in their water or their drink or something. It's all about winning. Come on, Nicole. You got to win.
I know. Terrible of me, right? What's with the good attitude? Oh, boy. So, I was always just hoping everyone else was doing well, too. So I wanted
Steve
the best
Bird,
for everybody.
I would send all the bears and wolves over to his area. So he
Bear.
Over there.
Someone sent them all to me. I had cougars, wolves, and bear at my site on Vancouver Island. I don't know. I think Larry sent them over to me. Let's blame him. I love Larry, so I can say that.
you're so nice and humble even when we interview. You're supposed to say, I wanted to win. You know, hoped everyone else tapped out. You know, come on.
I went into Mongolia wanting to win. I did. I'll admit that, definitely. I didn't think about it going into season 2. The winning was not part of the package for me. I don't know. It wasn't something that was primarily on my mind when I went into it. I went into it for the experience. I think Mongolia, we all went into it with a winning mindset. We all still got along and wanted everyone to do well. Definitely. I would say bar none, we all were thinking that on season 5. But definitely I went into it with the mindset of I would like to win this and I feel like I can. So that was my mindset.
I'm so glad you won that. No, I'm kidding.
smooth.
I have no idea. We're actually Tenderfoot and I will be traveling next week, and we both got it DVR'd so we can watch it. I hate that I'm going to be out of town.
It is starting this week. Am I correct?
It is Thursday night at 10. I don't have TV, so I can't watch it till the next day, till it comes on free online. And the week after, I'm teaching off grid, so I'll get to watch it in a few weeks. But it is airing this Thursday on History.
Y'all don't get to watch a pre-release or anything?
No, we watch it right alongside the rest of the world. Yeah. When you all watch it is when we see it. And most of us on Alone don't have television, so we have to watch it online later. We're the wrong subset.
Maybe if your school goes well, you could buy a TV. I'm just kidding.
It's the whole cable service. I do have a television. I have Netflix. I just don't have the whole TV service that goes along with it. I live fairly remotely. I don't even know if I have TV service out here.
I cut the cord, that thing. But with the show coming up, anything else that we need to know just to prepare everyone to be ready to watch or anything we can add?
You know, I'd say definitely if people have not watched the Making the Cut episode, which was aired last Thursday and is available online, the episode 0, yep. I think the editors did a fantastic job really showing the realities of what it was like to be there, really showing the reality of the camera work and how remote the site was. I mean, Vancouver Island and Patagonia were sort of remote. I mean, they were remote enough we weren't going to run into people. Mongolia was extremely remote. We were a 12-hour drive from the capital, a bumpy, dusty road. Really getting in and out of there was difficult. We were a long way from base camp. It was a really I travel all over the world, and it was the most remote place I've ever been. And we really were in the middle of nowhere. And the realities of that are if someone needs help, it takes a long time. And if something serious happens, you know, you're not going to be able to get help in there very quickly. And I think that making the cut episode does a nice job of really outlining what this season is going to be like. And it shows it's real, what they're showing there. They didn't, you know how often reality TV tries to make it seem more dun-dun-dun-dun, you know, more dire than it really is. But really, I think they did a good job at showing what the reality was of being out there. And I actually watched the Making the Cut Busy video when Larry was out here visiting. We were teaching a 5-day workshop together, and both of our hearts dropped into our stomach when we were watching it. We looked at each other and go, did we really do that? Are we crazy? So it sort of reminded us of how crazy it was, you know, and what a chance it was to do that. So,
well, I know you guys, you get to pick 10 tools again for this show, I'm sure.
Same.
Is that right?
Yes. Same.
Did you pick the same ones you picked the first time?
I didn't. I switched out my axe. There are not a lot of large trees up in where we were in Mongolia, and I decided to switch the axe out for a multi-tool. And I also brought snare wire because I thought it was important. I could use it as cordage. I could use it for trapping. I could use it to make hooks for fishing poles, you know, to build up like eyelets, to be able to build fly rods or whatever it is that, you know, we all get out there. But I thought that would be an excellent use of an item. And the multi-tool I brought, I actually changed the screwdriver because I don't need no screws there, right? I made it into a chisel, and then I took the can opener and changed it into a spoon gouge so I could carve with it. And then there's that day I found the huge can of food that I couldn't open. No.
Oh, yeah.
And that was because that would have been a sad thing, right?
Nicole, I've always said, you know, if I was to take one tool, it would be my Amazon Prime account. drone delivery. I would have it made. I mean, it would be tough.
I'm picturing the drone delivery.
Drone delivery. I would win hands down if no one else could pick that.
Great item choice.
Yeah. No, my luck, my wife would cancel the credit card or something during that time.
Oh, boy, that's fantastic.
When y'all are out there, do y'all get to outside of the list? I don't think I've asked this question. I've spoken with Alan before, but I don't can you take a book or a picture or anything like that or a few pages of anything?
They took photos.
There's no reading material allowed, no pen and paper, no reading material, because they don't want you to write things down and get your words and your feelings out that way, or to read a book and be able to fill your time that way. They want you to tell everything to the camera. And you do. You end up telling every little feeling and thought that goes through your head goes to that camera. And someone watches all of that footage, and someone knows me very well. So they don't allow you to do that for good reason, right? They want you to be able to tell your feelings to the screen. They do allow you to take photographs. That's the only thing that they allow.
So,
and the first season
ever...
I took a picture of my kids. This season I didn't. I didn't want them to pull me home again. So.
Yeah, that'd teach some kids. So did you ever record it and they go, record over it?
We're in our contract. We're not allowed to delete a thing. Yep. So no. And there were moments that I thought, oh, really wish I hadn't recorded that, because I had the camera on all the time. I filmed everything. If you record it, it's out there. So, and most of us record pretty much everything. So anything we say or feel or do or any mistake we make is captured on camera. So if someone wants to, you know, if they want to show your mistake over and over, they have, you know, they can. And think about that. I mean, think how many mistakes we all make on our day-to-day lives or being out in the woods and we do something silly or stupid. Then think about if you do that and then all of a sudden, you know, 5 million viewers get to watch that and they're judging you on that one or two or three mistakes that you make. And it's hard sometimes, you know, you read those comments from the armchair warriors that talk about how they could do it better, but the reality is we all make mistakes. Ours are just aired.
Right. See, mine would not be necessarily mistakes. It would be me talking about everyone I know in a negative connotation. My mother-in-law, I would just be going.
Yep, you
got
to be careful
trouble.
About
I
what
would,
you say, that's for sure.
I'd come back and have no friends. So, yep. So let me ask you, I tried to put you in a category before the show. You're not a prepper, maybe a little bit. You're not a survivalist, a homesteader. Where would you kind of fit in there? All of the above or just
a
naturalist?
Yeah, I think wilderness. I always say I'm a wilderness living instructor because it encompasses
okay.
survival skills as well as sort of homesteading and also just I like to live in harmony with nature, you know, rather than pushing against it. And that's why I say wilderness living skills instead of survival. Survival is you get in, you get out, you get yourself found, you're out in 72 hours. Wilderness living is you live in harmony with nature. Now, I also do teach prepping and that sort of thing, and in those cases, and signaling and all of that. So if you need to get out and be found, I do teach those skills as well. But, you know, if on a show like Alone, we're really trying to live in harmony with nature and do a long-term living situation. So I kind of put myself more in that category, though I do also teach prepping. I love teaching prepping. It's really fun. I love teaching people what they should have on them at all times for fire, shelter, water, food, signaling, and medical. And I really like empowering people with that knowledge. I feel like a lot of women and also kids hear it better coming from a woman. You know, it's something about it's teaching the same stuff that maybe a big burly guy is teaching, but somehow certain factions of our society are able to hear it a little better if it's coming from a woman's mouth instead of from some big dude. So I feel like,
you know,
I make prepping accessible for people that might not normally be into prepping.
You know, as you said that, what came to my mind was, you familiar with the Andy Griffith Show?
Yeah.
Okay. At one scene, if I remember correctly, this kid said he couldn't swim, and
mm-hmm.
Andy picks him up and throws him in the water. That's how a man does it, and a woman would never do that. That's kind
exactly,
of what you're saying
yes.
there. Yeah, he, I think
it
he
is.
Picks
you know,
the kid
I...
up and throws him in.
Yep. It's a different way of teaching. I taught a class a couple weeks ago, a 5-day class, and I had a lot of beginners in it. I had some people who really knew what they were doing, a survival school instructor, as a matter of fact, and a couple of instructors were there. But I also had a lot of people who were new to the skills world, and I really was proud of them for coming by themselves and taking this class. And I think part of why they took it is because I was teaching it, you know, and it was, from a woman's perspective. And they didn't know anything. And had they been thrown into a situation where it was a skills class where it's really tough and they push you really hard and they expect people to drop out, you know, there is a place for those types of classes, but that's not my teaching style. My teaching style is providing people feeling like they're in a space that they can actually learn. I feel that people, when they are stressed out, you actually don't learn and retain information very well. And I find if you're in more of a relaxed environment and you're learning things bit by bit, you tend to retain that information and you're able to step into it. And all those people who took the class who were beginners now feel empowered to take a next level class. And I feel like if they'd been in a class where it was more militaristic, I guess you would say, perhaps
right.
that they wouldn't have ever, first of all, they probably wouldn't have taken it, and secondly, they never would have come back. And now, you know, they're doing things that they never even thought were possible. And I really like opening up the skills world to people like that.
So how did you get into, you know, I guess doing this? I mean, how do you turn that into a business and whatnot? And I'm sure the show has helped out a lot, but you know, I'm just kind of curious about that. I mean, I would love to learn about that.
I've been teaching skills before I started my own, you know, wilderness school or whatever you want to call it. I taught at primitive skills gatherings, and I still do. I still teach it in like 3 to 4 of those a year. And those gatherings are amazing because all of the skills instructors, everyone teaches for free. And I think people don't necessarily
right.
realize
yep.
that. I teach it. I probably teach for 2 months out of the year for free. And I think, and all the people do that teach at those gatherings. And I always think how great. And a lot of people learned from those gatherings. I have a lot of great mentors whom I learned from that still teach at those gatherings. And I feel like it's sort of a way to give back. But it's also like family, you know, it's old home week. And my kids have grown up going to these gatherings and had the opportunity to grow up in the skills world because of these and have a lot of freedom and feel pretty good about their skill levels because of these gatherings and the people that are there. So I sort of just took that to, you know, I guess the next level in teaching, you know, from my home and teaching for other schools. And I don't know, it seemed like a natural progression. I've always been a teacher. I'm a professor, a part-time professor at Prescott College and in their graduate school. And I love teaching. I was a high school biology teacher a very long time ago at my oldest son's high school and taught college for many years. And just have a real deep love of teaching, no matter whatever sort of form that takes, whether it's, you know, formal classroom or teaching, you know, teaching outside and wandering through the woods. And so that's my passion. So it seemed like a natural progression to hold classes and you know, teach that to other people and have other people feel empowered when they have that knowledge, and then they can go on and learn more and teach it to other people. So it's just a spreading of knowledge, and it feels if you hold knowledge, you should spread that knowledge.
Definitely, and you're living this too. I mean, you said you live somewhat remotely or whatnot. Is that
I live
correct?
Pretty remotely. Yeah, I live. I have a house. You know, I've got electricity and all that stuff, so I'm not off the grid. I have internet, which is how I'm talking to you, is through my internet phone, because I don't have cell phone service where I live. It's too remote for cell phone service.
Wow.
And I need internet for, you know, work. But I live a quarter mile off the nearest road down a big gravel driveway. It's a beautiful property. I have no neighbors. It's surrounded by woods. I can't hear anybody here. A lot of bear, mountain lion, elk, deer on my land. And I teach right here on my property. I can run classes from here.
Are you in the American readout, or is that a ways from you? Kind of the geographical.
You're not familiar with that?
It's called
the American
readout. Okay. So my next question is.
You have to tell me what that is. Yeah.
Well, it's a it's kind of a readout is where a lot of patriots, we'll say, have moved to Washington, the Oregon area, and they're in a sense claiming it in case the crap hits the fan, they can work together and survive.
Gotcha.
So
our community's like that, very much so. We have a pretty tight-knit community here. I live in there's a town of 2,500. I live near Raymond, Washington. That's the closest town. I'm about 15 minutes outside of town in the woods. But that's my closest community. And it's a pretty tight-knit community, and if something happened, this community would know what to do. They're a community that lives really close to the land, and that's part of what I love about it.
So I notice all throughout your website, and you even make some swabs, I think it's tinctures and swabs. I don't know. I'm new to that kind of stuff. But you're big into wellness too, correct?
I am. I teach natural wellness. I'm a holistic wellness coach, especially for people with autoimmune issues, getting people off of big pharma and Western medication and helping them figure out how to change their diet, lifestyle, and use herbal supplements in order to be fully healthy and fully engaged in psychologically and physically. Yeah, that's a big part of what I do.
So 2 years ago, I really never heard of this. And a lady, we have a local lady that kind of does the same thing, maybe not on the scale that you do it on, but she has just opened my eyes to the drugs that we take are drugs that, like plants, the original drug was made by a plant, and in the big pharma changed it so they could make money off of it, not necessarily to make it better.
Right.
And she would go through some of the, like, if you have high blood pressure, stop taking these drugs and start doing this. And it just kind of opened my eyes going, wow. And so you would probably agree that big pharma is a ripoff that's, in a sense, killing us.
Oh, I would agree with that. Yes, most definitely.
Yeah. And
definitely.
So
big pharma is a big enemy. You know, I think they really try to get people hooked on medication. There are many things you can do in your own, you know, very easily and very cheaply that will actually serve you much better than big pharma. And I think people, you know, often people follow their doctors blindly because people are scared when they get sick and they listen to what their doctors tell them. And not that doctors are, you know, they're trying to do the right thing, of course, but I think it's important to question and to do your own research and to maybe also talk to a naturopath if you're going to be going down that road and see what they have to say. Because they're not run by Big Pharma.
Right. Did you have anything on the health? You pointed to my notes.
No, because, well, I don't know if you were going to ask that, because I was going to ask.
Okay, you can ask that.
Okay. I don't want to, like, I'm changing gears or whatever here, but I was just curious about, like, your survival kit and speaking of wellness and stuff like that, because yours would probably look a lot different than maybe Alan's or someone else's on the show or some of the other guys that we have on this show. So what would your survival kit, your EDC, whatever you would call it, what would you carry in yours?
Actually, Alan and my survival kit looks bizarrely alike.
Okay.
We, you know, the plants and things, I have my first aid salve in there because it's really sometimes, you know, sometimes you can find the plants that you need and sometimes you can't. So I always do carry my first aid salve in my survival kit, as it's important to have that with me. But mine has the basics of, you know, the basics of fire, multiple. I always have, redundancy, right? One is none and two is one. I always have at least a few ways to make fire. I have tinder with me. I always wear a ferro rod around my neck. I always have another ferro rod on me. I always carry a couple of lighters. I always have tinder, multiple ways to make fire. Water, I always carry purification, whether I have both water tablets, because sometimes you're moving quickly. I have extra water bags on top of my water bottle. I have a single stainless steel, actually I have a titanium right now, water bottle that I can boil water in. It has a nesting cup. You want to make sure it's single walled so you don't blow it up. I have water for purification systems, both a water filter and water tablets. Water is so important. I have a way to be able to collect water. A poncho is always a really good way. It can be both a water collection system, and it can also be a way to keep yourself, you know, to keep yourself warm and dry if it is raining. I also have bags that double as transpiration bags if I'm in the desert. And then food, not so much. You know, food, you can go a long time without food. I have some basic food procurement. In my car, I have food. My car kit's completely, you know, different, and I have my huge bug-out bag and all of that. But I'm just talking what I have on me 24/7. Food, I have basic fishing kit, snare wire, just some really basics to be able to catch food because it's less important. Shelter, I'll have, of course, paracord and tarp, but a shelter sheet, emergency blanket, things like that, wire saw, of course, knives. I always have a few knives on me. And then signaling and medical are huge, of course. You know, signaling if you really do need to be found. And my kids, you know, it's really important. My 10-year-old has his own kit that goes in his backpack. He likes to go for wanders in the woods. And, you know, I know that he'll be okay. He can make a fire and he can signal for help and all of that. And has a blanket, emergency blanket in case of emergency and he gets cold. But signaling, you know, signal mirror and flashlight and whistle and, you know, all of the usual things there. And then, of course, medical. I have a pretty big medical kit that I carry on me all the time, both herbal and, you know, things, you know, if you get a bleed, I have, two tourniquets on me at all times because that's something that you can't just stop on your own. You need to have additional things for that. So I have a pretty good medical kit with me 24/7.
Yeah, and things that I have in my bag that seem to be a little different than yours is I have a can of caviar and some Dom Perignon.
Oh, I'm traveling with you then. Awesome. Great.
No, I'm just kidding.
And my Amazon account.
Same day delivery in Charlotte, North Carolina. Same day delivery.
Excellent.
If I want something, it could be here.
Oh, boy. That's great.
Now, when you travel... Now, you have to kind of limit this stuff. We actually had someone within our groups and everything post something about their travel kit.
Yeah.
Do you have something like, does that have to look totally different, or is that just like...
No,
you just
my
try
travel
to
kit
it?
Is... Yeah, so I have some tips for that. So my travel kit is essentially identical to the kit that I carry that I just told you about. The only differences are I have ceramic knives because they can't be detected by TSA. I'll pack my regular knives in my check-on bag, but I always have a couple of ceramic knives on me, those little small folders, and those are fantastic. And those can't get, no, TSA doesn't care about those. You can bring lighters on board. You can bring ferro rods on board. So my kit is identical to the one I carry. The exception is that I take my knives out. The only place I have ever had my wire saw confiscated was in South Korea. And I can't believe no one else was confiscated, but I just sort of looked. They found it. They looked at me, and I sort of nodded and said, yeah, you should probably take that. I can't believe you're the only person in the past 10 years who's found that and cared. But no one else in the world, no airport has ever cared. So I carry the same kit. And, you know, really, I want to be the one prepared if something happens. You know, when you're traveling, I want to make sure that kit travels with me and can get through TSA regulations. And everything I have on there is, you know, semi-legal. Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. I told you, I have one of them knives. I have a I'll just release it right now.
I have a nylon one. It can go in your collar.
Yeah, that's
true. Stone blades also get through. You can wear them as jewelry, and no one ever notices that you have a stone blade.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. An obsidian sharp. Yep.
Mind blown.
I have a spy belt. I've told you this.
Those are great.
He's Batman.
And I actually have
one of Wazoo's. They have those cool belts.
It's, you know, I went through Jason Hansen's Spy School, and he has one. Has zippers, and so I went through the whole school, and I actually have a ceramic knife in there, and I told you this. I went to a professional basketball game, which that is a lot for me to go to. I do not like professional sports, and I'm an athlete. I mean, I'm just so turned off by them, and I walked through the machine, and it went beep, 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 beep. I'm like, oh, and a cold sweat just broke down on me because I knew, I'm like, oh, man, I am caught busted. Because I got fishing hooks. I got all this stuff in my belt. And so the lady made me walk back through it. It beep, beep, beep again. And then she goes, do you have a belt buckle on? I'm like, yep. And I showed her, and she wanded it, and I went right straight through. And I'm like,
nice.
I was really scared.
Those spy belts are pretty cool. Yeah. I have one from Wazoo that they make, and they're really good at making
wearable
survival. Yeah, Wazoo. Wazoo survival gear. They make wearable. That's their whole thing. Wearable survival gear. I have a lot of their gear, and they have hats that have places to hide things. They have belts. They have all sorts of really small gear, and that's very, very. That's actually useful. Like, it actually works. I wear their ferro rod around my neck 24/7. It looks like a piece of jewelry, and it has a great ceramic striker on it. And I've started a lot of fires, and it's a great bar trick, by the way. Yes. So.
Oh yes.
For all those times I travel by myself, I tell you, you want to make friends, you bring that out.
Yep.
So. The wearable survival gear is great.
I take all my laces in my shoes and put a little small ferro rod on my shoe, and it looks like it's part of the shoe. So, yeah, that's awesome.
Yep.
So let me ask you this, because this is you found out History Channel or someone called you and said, hey, would you like to apply for this show? Or, I mean, what kind of mindset, I mean, when someone says, hey, we want to test your skills to go out and live as long as you can. It could be up to a year. And the last man standing wins. I mean, what kind of mindset do you have as you're filling out that application?
You know, I didn't really worry about it. I got asked on for season one where they had no women. They did try. We all said no. And I said no because I didn't know if it was real. You know, I didn't believe them when they said, really, there's no film crew. You'll be by yourself. I was like, I don't know. If it's good, call me for season two. And they did, luckily. So, I don't know, I applied with the knowledge that I was going to, like, I just knew I was going to get on. You know, they'd asked me for one season, they asked me back the next season, and for season two, and I just, I don't know, I felt like I was qualified and that they would see that. So I wasn't really nervous. I was excited when they said yes. There's a little bit of nerves in there, right? Like, am I going to get on or not? But I was pretty sure about it. I prepped for season two, not as much as I prepped for season five, though, which is interesting because it's a late, you know, I'm doing it again. But the preparation for season five was much more intense than my preparation for season two. Season two, I went into with the knowledge that I thought I had what it took, but it was really testing myself And I never got to reach my limit. I never got to figure out, you know, what my actual survival limits were. I was still had meals in camp when I left. I still had rations left. Actually threw away. I had, like, enough for two meals in camp that I threw away when I left. I put it back in the ocean when I ended up leaving on day 57. One of my kids called me home, and that's why I ended up leaving. If I'd had it was only going on another week, you know, I might have stayed. But you don't know these things when you go in, and who knows how long the winter would have lasted. But, you know, I felt like I had a lot more time in me at when I left. I wasn't nearly at the end of my rope or even close to it. Now, season five, I prepared a lot. I really did. I knew I was going against nine other tough competitors. It was a new environment. I really, really prepped myself.
And everyone wanted to win that because there were no winners that came back if I remember right.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. It was just a bunch of 10 losers. That's all.
Yeah. That is hilarious. No. So I do have this question because it's interesting because this was a show. And you lasted 57 days. But that what we saw in you, in your spirit, in your heart, we know that if it was real world, we want to be with you because I know that you would survive. Some of these other characters, I don't know. Angry American and I would have gotten a lot of fights. And I love we hang out. And I mean, he's intense all the time. And I would
Chris
be,
is a great guy.
At one point, I would be afraid for my life with him. I just would. But for you, I mean, so if it was real world, we could actually see that you could really do this if you had to for a long time. And that was really cool. I mean, you got to know that. And I think people saw that with you. They're like, wow, if I'm ever stuck on an island or I'm in that situation, I want to be with Nicole.
Oh, well, thank you for that. Yeah,
because you made it fun, and you got this language with bears. It's crazy.
I do. That's true. Yeah, I have a lot of bear on my property here too, and I actually have a mountain lion on it right now. Right now, as we're speaking, there's a mountain lion prowling around my property. I like communing with the animals. You know, I enjoy that. I like. I don't know. They're predators. We're predators, and. I enjoy that interaction.
and that brings another question up after reading some of the stuff that you've produced. What's this bird talk stuff?
Oh, bird language. It's what kept
what
keeps me alive in Africa.
What is this bird language stuff? I mean, just kind of explain that to me, please.
Yeah, no problem. I mean, it's pretty simple, you know. That's the thing. A lot of people haven't heard of it until they get explained to them, and they're like, "Oh, that's all it is." It's so easy. So bird language is basically the birds are the gossips of the forest. They tell you everything that's going on, and they're really the ones that lets all the other animals in the forest know what's happening. So if a Cooper's hawk comes in, you know all the birds go silent, all the songbirds do, and you know that, you know, there's a Cooper, at least around here, you know a Cooper's hawk's coming in. You know, if you have birds popping up in a little bit of a line, you know there's a dog, maybe it's a coyote or something coming through. If the birds are doing a sort of umbrella around this animal, you know it's a cat. You can tell by their calls what sort of wildlife is there. And when I lived in Africa, and I still guide there. I have a safari company, and I guide over in Africa. And this is how I keep clients alive is through bird language. And I work with the Kalahari Bushmen, who are just brilliant at it, and a man named John Young, who has a great website, birdlanguage.com, and he wrote a book about bird language called What the Robin Knows that's super accessible. And you read it, and you go, oh, I've got this. And anyway, so, you know, over there, I know from the bird language, I know if there's a poisonous snake. I know if there's a mongoose. I know if, which is not a worry to me, but it sure is a worry to birds, for birds. I know if there's a cat that's there. I know if there's danger coming. And that's really important to be able to tune into the language of the birds. The moms over there, when I'm walking in the men are good at it too, but the moms are brilliant and the grandmoms are brilliant at bird language because they're alone foraging with little kids in the middle of the Kalahari Desert. They have to be really good at bird language because if they don't know what's out there, their children are going to get hurt or eaten. And so they are excellent at it. But you can use it here all the time. You know, I know I can tell by the ravens where the elk are. You know, hunters use this language often when they're out bow hunting or rifle hunting. around here. It's very common. And you can really listen to the birds and know what's happening in your area. And once you tune into that, this whole world gets opened up to you, and it's pretty amazing.
Wow. Okay. Because in the book, did you read the Mockingjay and all that? The
Yep. I love that series. Yes, The Hunger Games.
What series is it? The Hunger Games. Did you read The Hunger Games?
I watched
it. I sure did.
I'm asking Tenderfoot. Oh my gosh.
Oh yeah.
We keep him in the closet.
Let him out on special occasions.
Yes. Because in that, Mockingjay is the bird that will repeat the song kind of thing. Anyway.
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know if that had anything to do with it. Yeah, exactly. Yes.
So,
oh boy.
Do you have any tips for surviving alone? What would be your tips of if you're found in a situation for somebody that, I guess speaking to not just an audience that does have some kind of experience, but what if someone has no experience?
I would say it's 95% psychological. It really is. And when you hear tales of survival, it's really people's psychology that gets them through. Stop, breathe, think about what you need to do. People panic. You know, there's sort of fight or flight, people say, but the more common one is freezing and really not knowing what to do at all and then freezing, like just staying there, right? Really try to take a deep breath, evaluate your situation, and then take charge of it. And trying to keep a positive attitude. I mean, you mentioned sort of my positive attitude came through on television. I mean, that was really important for me, making sure that I had a positive mental attitude, and giving gratitude in the morning helps do that. It just, even if I'm having a bad day, and I have bad days like anybody else, giving gratitude helps turn that around for me. Yeah, it's true. It's not, life isn't perfect, right? We all have lots of stuff. We all have our stuff going on, and I try to give gratitude to remember what's good, because there's so much that's good, even when things are going bad, that it reminds me that overall things are really excellent. So for people that are stuck in a survival situation, which is generally when someone would be alone, right, definitely keeping your spirits up is huge. And, of course, you know, doing things like avoiding hypothermia and accidents and injury and that kind of thing. But 95% of it's just in your head. So I would think that's the most important thing, psychology of survival. Yeah.
Awesome. That is amazing. It has been a pleasure having you on. We're coming up at the end of our show, but Nicole, I hope to have you on again. I hope to meet you one day.
Yeah,
I think you being
here
on the West Coast and me being on, we'll make it happen. I'll travel out there sometime. It's been a pleasure having you on the Prepping Academy.
Thank you.
And I'm going to have all your links, your link to your site on the podcast when it comes out. And it has absolutely been a pleasure. I've been so excited.
Oh, it's been a pleasure for me as well.
About having you on.
Thank you so much.
And I have to tell Chin, I have to give Chin a thumbs up because he introduced
us
again.
Oh, he's such a great connector.
Oh, don't say that. Oh, my gosh. You're going to build
his
ego
up. Oh, you don't. Took the words right out of your mouth, huh? He really is. He's so good at that. So.
Yeah. Yep. Well, thank you for coming on, and you take care, and we will love to have you on again.
Yes.
And maybe
I'd
even in the next few weeks, talking about the show, maybe.
Oh,
we'll see.
Good. I'm excited about that.
Yep. Yeah. Things are going to be happening starting Thursday night. So.
Yes.
Yep.
Well, thank
very
you.
Exciting.
Hey. Thank you very much.
Oh, yep. You all have a great evening.
You too.
Right. Thank you, Nicole.
Yeah. All right.
That was Nicole Appel from the Alone Show, the series. The new one's coming on Thursday night. What an amazing lady.
Yes.
I'm telling you. I want, if I'm stuck on an island, I want to be with her.
Now, this is what's crazy. We are a prepping show. She doesn't call herself a prepper.
Not
she
so much. She preps,
right. Right. But she doesn't have this mindset in like we call ourselves that.
Correct.
So her versus a prepper.
Her versus who?
A prepper. Her versus a prepper.
Oh, she wins every time. Okay. Because a prepper dies because this stuff runs out. If you can't survive off the land and make your own medicine, that's the goal in all this. And I always say that. Preppers die. We got to merge into the survivalists and homesteaders and become this new name, this new thing, like what she is.
Right.
What Nicole is, she's got it all. She's the complete package.
Because when something happens, and she's not worried about what's going to happen. She is just living.
She understands the mental, and you know, a lot of things I teach is, hey, there's three aspects. There's things you got to buy, things you got to learn, and there's mindset.
Yeah.
And she has absolutely, I mean, and I read once, and I can't remember who said this, the more you have up here in your brain, the less you have to carry on your back.
Right.
Anyway, hey,
yeah,
guys.
Let's talk about it again.
Yeah, that was the Prepping Academy, guys. What a great show. What an unbelievable guest. You guys take care, and we'll see you guys next time
on the
Prepping Academy. Later.
Thanks for listening to the Prepping Academy podcast. Preppers unite at www.preppingacademy.com.